welcome to Meet Me at the Movies. Noel T. Manning, the second here with Thomas Manning. Good to see you, buddy. Man, I tell you, Thomas, we are in the preseason, but you and I have been having some fun at the box office lately, and also at the home box office. We've been enjoying some films at home and theatrically, and you and I got a chance to check out early screening of Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Thomas, this is the 10th film over the course of the franchise that was launched back in 1968 as a film, but the original novel came out in 1963. And so here we are talking about Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. So we, you and I really loved a trilogy that was that came out as part of this, kind of that reboot trilogy. Started back in 2011 and went through 2017. And here we are with a continuation of that, but in a different way. Any other thoughts you want to make sure you share about previous things before we kind of dive in?
Oh, yeah. Obviously, the trilogy, the last trilogy, you had Matt Reeves directing two of those and led by Andy Serkis in the lead role, the lead motion capture role as Caesar, who is one of my favorite protagonists that we've seen in a trilogy in the past. Yeah. Really, the past 25 years or so, just a beautiful character arc, and I love the entire journey of that character, and I knew that coming into this, it was going to be kind of difficult to live up to just the, I guess, the shadow of Caesar, and but they took this film forward 200, 300 years down the line, which I think was a great decision, and they actually make some really interesting narrative decisions with that shadow of Caesar that I was speaking about, which we can get into a little bit later on.
Yeah, and I have been a fan of the Apes since childhood, and one of the first sci-fi series I remember going to theaters to see, and the original came out, I said, in 68. I didn't see that one in theaters, but I saw it on TV, and I remember just being blown away by it, and ended up, you know, wanting to get all the merchandise connected to it. And this was one of the, probably one of the first film franchises that, that utilized merchandising in the way that it did, that we actually saw later with other films really taking advantage of it. But the Apes did that, and you know, they had spinoff TV series. I've got like some novels here. This is from the TV series version. Battle for the Planet of the Apes, which was one of the films, Beneath the Planet of the Apes, and Conquest. And so, you know, I've got these kind of old school paperback novels, and I just still am fascinated anytime I hear there's going to be a new version of this. And so I was really excited when I heard Kingdom was coming out and kind of the new approach, but also the continuation. It wasn't a reboot. It was a continuation of a story that we have come to know and love, especially the past, golly, you know, 12 or so years.
Absolutely. And one of the things that made the past, you know, 12 years or so of these Apes movies stand out was the incredible advancement of visual effects from Weta Digital, which they're always right there at, you know, turning the curve before anybody else and continuing to uncover new pathways and really kind of challenge what we think we know about the limits of visual effects and motion capture. And I thought War for the Planet of the Apes, I didn't think that could be topped. But I really think here with Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, they have somehow taken that next step. And I just, yeah, have the utmost respect and have to give all my kudos and applause to them. Just looking at the eyes of the apes and just the minute details of their faces, and imbuing the most human characteristics possible into them. Just everything about it is something that my brain is still working to catch up with, I think.
Yeah, it is a beautiful film. The production design right away from the beginning just captured me. And at every scene, at every turn, I just found myself going, look at that, look at that. It was just so beautiful, that design. And you mentioned, you know, these apes, you know, we're used to seeing what Andy Serkis did. And I think they've just continued to advance that. And I'm just kind of blown away by that, because this film to me is what's a bit different about this one than the others. If you even go back to War of the Planet of the Apes, you know, we've continued to see fewer and fewer humans within the stories as it's progressed since 2011. And this one, you know, there's only one true main human character, or as some of the apes call humans, echoes. And that particular character by the name of May slash Nova is played by Freya Allen. And if you stick around and watch after the break, you're going to be seeing an interview we have with Freya Allen, as well as Owen Teague, and also Kevin Durant, not the basketball player, who are connected to this film. But mostly apes that we're seeing on screen, and of course some other flying creatures as well. But to me, that was a fascinating thing about this, and you honestly didn't miss the humans, because these ape characters were so engaging, and they did a great job developing these characters as well. And that was something I loved too, Thomas.
Yeah, and if you look at the Matt Reeves trilogy and the arc of that, you know, it started out with apes and humans coexisting and then apes slowly taking over. But we saw, you know, the first two films in that series through the eyes mostly of humans, and then it was kind of transitioning through Caesar's eyes.
Yeah.
And that continued by the end. It was fully through Caesar's eyes. And this film is, of course, again, fully through the eyes of the apes. And I think they might kind of mirror that if they continue this into a trilogy, slowly transitioning, bringing humans into the fold, much like they did with apes taking over in the first trilogy. So I think that's just a very fascinating potential for where we could go with this. You know, I was talking with you about this at lunch yesterday. What is their end point for this? What's their end game? Where are they
Yeah.
going to try to go? Is it going to be another war? Is it just going to be a continued cycle of that? But they're planting the seeds of, you know, perhaps it is possible to find that coexistence between apes and humans, and they share a lot more in common than what separates them. And
Yeah.
you know, perhaps they can find that peace. And so that's something that excites me to think about how they can continue to really dig into those themes.
Yeah, I really do have hopes that this particular film will do well at the box office and have some good legs. And once it hits homes, even, you know, more people will get a chance to see it, because I do want to see the continuation of this. And this film, it does not leave you with a cliffhanger, but it does leave you with some interesting questions. It answers some questions that we had throughout the film Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, but also it leaves you wondering, wow, okay, I want to know more, but in a good way. It's not like, you know, some of these films we've seen in recent years that are franchise films, they literally leave you with a cliffhanger that you've got to wait 2, 3, or who knows how many more years before you can find out, you know, how does this story progress? But this one had a very clear beginning and a very clear ending of a chapter. But it felt complete, and I did appreciate that as well. But I do hope they get a chance to further this story with these apes and the humans that are still around. And you know, one of the things that we find out very early on, Thomas, in this film is that the humans, most humans have lost the ability to be able to speak, to have a higher intellect. They basically become feral animals, and that's how they are treated. And so much so that they've dwindled in population, and some of the apes in this film have never seen a human before. That's how different this landscape and this environment and this world is now. It's changed tremendously.
And there's one more really critical aspect of the narrative I want to talk about, and that is the religious undertones and overtones in this film. The villain, who is played by Kevin Durant, who you're going to be speaking with, He's this ape, who's crowned himself as a king, and he basically wants to play God. He thinks he can speed up the process of evolution in a certain way, and he is just not content to let the natural world take its course. He wants to take nature into his own hands. And throughout the history of the world, we've seen that's never a good thing when you try to play with the laws of nature. And the apes, a lot of the apes in this film look to, this is going back to what I mentioned, this shadow of Caesar. They look to Caesar as basically a godlike figure. And generations later, certain factions of the apes have contorted and corrupted his messages to suit their own agendas. And for all intents and purposes, the kingdom of Primordius Caesar, is that his name?
I don't think that's right, but he does take Caesar's name.
Yes. Hey,
Proximus.
yeah,
He's
okay.
Proximus Caesar.
Okay.
I think you're referring to some kind of transformer, but it's Proximus Caesar.
Okay.
Proximus Caesar.
Anyway, for my main point, for all intents and purposes, they are basically a kingdom of religious extremists that have, taken Caesar's name in vain. And also, just another really cool part of the design of their kingdom. They're basically pirates. They live on the coast. The aesthetic is so cool and continues to show another side of this world. Yeah, I mean, where they're living, I think that's a cool place to live, but I don't really support their ideologies either, so
Right.
yeah.
Well, and you mentioned the ones who have kind of crowned themselves as, they are the apes to rule them all. But you also realize that there are different clans who live in different areas, and they've adopted different lifestyles. Like there's a main character by the name of Noah, who we meet early on, who really doesn't have any knowledge of who or what Caesar was and what it meant to the apes. But his clan, they live basically in the trees, so to speak. But we come to find out they're really not trees, but I'm not going to give it away. But they live a completely different type of lifestyle. But you talked about Primordius Caesar, Proximus Caesar. Proximus Caesar, has taken it upon himself to force apes to follow. And by doing that, basically raiding villages, burning them down, and really just kidnapping populations and making them his own, which is very cult-like as well. And so it's a fascinating film, Thomas. I think in many ways it speaks to culture classes. It speaks to looking at history and twisting it for your own needs, the thirst for power, and then the thirst for knowledge in a different way as well. I really was the more I've thought about this film after we watched it, the more and more I love it, and more I appreciate it.
Yeah, Noah and his group of apes, they don't know the history of Caesar, but they represent his qualities and in a much more pure and beautiful fashion than any of these any of the clan that has taken his name in vain. And I think that's just really interesting to consider. And there's one more character as well that I want to make sure to briefly mention. And that is Raka the orangutan, and he is played by Peter Macon. And this character, he's wise, he's faithful, he's selfless, he's loyal, and he's also hilarious. And he is basically almost like a monk-like orangutan who I think he considers himself to be a part of the Order of Caesar and tries to retain the lessons that were passed down. So I just really loved that character, and his interactions, especially with Noah, our protagonist.
Absolutely. Anytime you're looking at a film that's part of a franchise, you want to, from a critical standpoint, you want to look at it on its own. How does it stand on its own? But you cannot help but evaluate it based on the other films that have come before it. And you and I talked a little bit about this, and You said it, and maybe you've changed your mind, but you said, you appreciated this, but probably those previous three films, the previous trilogy, you appreciated more. Has that changed, or are you still kind of feeling that on that line there?
I think I will still stand by that for now, but I think this is really solid effort from Wes Ball, who directed this, coming into it, and I think he definitely, you can tell he has a lot of reverence for the legacy of these films, and I think he should be very proud of what he has accomplished here. But yeah, if I were to make a ranking, which I don't like to do, I think I would still put that trilogy slightly ahead of this, but this is not far behind, and there is so much to love about this movie.
Yeah, this is a solid standalone sequel to me. You can go into this film. I want to make sure we mention this. You can go into this film without any knowledge of the previous films and still appreciate it. It sets it up with a title sequence right at the start to kind of let you know where we are, what's happened, and it does it really in just a few lines, but it's enough to set up this story that, like, if you haven't seen it, that's fine. We were at a critics only screening, and there was a critic there who had never seen any of the other ones, and I heard the person talking and saying, I had knowledge of the others, just hadn't seen it, but you know what? I really appreciated this one, and I think that speaks highly. Because I think you and I can appreciate it even more because of our knowledge and our background. But yeah, I'm with you. I loved that that trilogy that we saw from 2011 through 2017. Probably one of my favorite complete trilogies of all time. I think it did such an amazing job with a story and a character arc that was just seamless to me in so many ways, and I loved that. But I also really appreciate this one. And the pacing of this one early on is a little slower, and that's because it's setting up a lot with certain characters and also with a story. But really, once it gets in, maybe 15 minutes into it, 15 to 20 minutes into it, I was just like, wow. And I was just compelled by what I was seeing. There is action. There is drama. There is some comedy, as you had mentioned, as well. And this movie, running time 145 minutes, so it's not a short film. But I did not find myself looking at my watch at all, during this film.
The first time I did notice the time, 2 hours had already passed, and I was like, oh wow, well we're about to the end of this, but it only feels like maybe an hour and a half at the most has passed. So I think it is paced quite efficiently, and I would very much encourage people to watch Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. And once again, you don't have to have seen the others. I think it's a very good entry point, and it'll be cool to see if this brings new fans to the franchise as well, and maybe inspire them to check out some of the previous entries. But yeah, I think for Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, I will give a strong B plus, and it's one that I will return to.
All right, for me, I'm giving it a solid B rating, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. A B rating for me, B plus from Thomas. We appreciate you joining us. I invite you to stick around after the quick intermission. We are going to come back with some interviews from those behind the scenes right here on Meet Me at the Movies from the Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes.
Won't you come and meet me at the movies?